mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, highlighting the many ways Blanchard Valley Center serves the local developmentally disabled community in recognition of DD Awareness Month. Also this morning, everything you thought you knew about parenting is about to be turned on its head. Child development expert Heather Shoemaker explains why it's okay to go up the slide and other renegade rules for raising confident and creative kids in today's Throwback Thursday. And we'll tell you what's happening in the month of March at the Hancock Historical Museum. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, March 6th, 2025. The big story, one of the big stories this week, and it's been a very busy week, but one of the big stories this week, the federal government, in its effort to reduce spending, put out a list of a bunch of federal office buildings and leased space that they want to divest. They want to sell these buildings. They want to get out of the leases. And they say they could save billions upon billions of dollars a year. Federal government office in downtown Columbus is on that list of properties that could be sold off under the Trump administration. Bloomberg reports the John W. Bricker Federal Building on North High Street in Columbus could be shuttered as part of the overall Department of Government Efficiency cuts. The facility currently houses offices for various federal agencies, including the Department of Agriculture, HUD, Social Security Administration, and more. Federal buildings in Youngstown, Medina, and Cincinnati on the list as well. In Toledo, DOGE wants to end the current lease of the U.S. Attorney's Office in the 4 Seagate building, estimating annual savings of over $400,000 if they were able to get out of that lease. Also, Toledo's U.S. Probation and Pretrial Services Office, also in the crosshairs, which could reportedly save over $140,000. No word on where any of those offices might relocate, or would they simply go away? We don't know, but that's just kind of interesting that it is touching us in the Buckeye State. We'll see where that goes. It was kind of interesting. They published the list, then they pulled the list back, and then they updated the list, and then they pulled that back, and so nobody really knows exactly what's going on, but some of those in the Buckeye State are indeed on the list. So what else is going on? Have you been following the Eagles? Biologists are praising Jackie and Shadow, the new eagle parents, taking very good care of their new baby chicks in Big Bear Valley, California. Thousands of people have been watching the eagle cam every day, waiting for those eggs to hatch. And this week, two out of the three eaglets hatched and are now thriving in their nest, 145 feet in the air over Big Bear Valley. Sandy Steers is the biologist who runs the Friends of Big Bear Valley website and the 24/7 Eagle Cam on YouTube. So if you've been following that, from what I understand, unless something has changed, the third egg has not yet hatched. And so they don't know whether that third egg is viable, but they do have at least two baby chicks. It's the first time in like 2 or 3 years that this eagle pair has become viral celebrities on YouTube, have actually successfully procreated. So that is cool. They've been following that. The Eagle Cam, 24/7 Eagle Cam from Big Bear Valley in California on YouTube. Pretty cool stuff. And really, really neat to see the eagles nurturing their young. It's it's nature at its finest right there. It really is. Next big thing, daylight saving time arrives this weekend. And so we move the clocks forward. You want to make sure that you spring forward Saturday night before you hit the sack, or early Sunday morning if you are still up at 2 a.m. You jump ahead an hour, because if you don't, if you forget, you're going to be an hour late for everything. This is the one. If you miss this time change, you're going to be an hour late for everything. And did you know that during the spring forward time change, hospitals report significant spikes in heart attack visits on the Monday that follows the time change. For whatever reason, the exact medical explanation is unclear, but experts say that there is a documented rise in heart attack visits to the ER on the Monday that follows the time change. Experts believe the lost hour of sleep plays a role in this by disrupting the body's natural rhythm. So, says one way to combat the change, the reason I bring this up now, we're a couple of days away from the time change. What they suggest is that you start going to bed and waking up 15 minutes earlier, a day or two or three ahead of the change. So beginning today, you'll get to the hit the sack about 15 minutes earlier than you normally would. And if you can, wake up 15 minutes later than you normally would, and you do this for a couple of days, kind of ease into the time change, you can avoid the nastiness that may follow. Hey, if that's what it takes to prevent a heart attack, okay. That's kind of our doom and gloom story. The time change, you're going to have a heart attack. We're all going to die. The time change is going to kill us. This is our doom and gloom story. Actually, we do have another doom and gloom story, because every day you have to have some doom and gloom story, something that we should be fearful of, worried about, concerned over, a society is doomed, we're all going to die story. And if it's not the heart attacks, the spike in heart attacks after the time change, maybe it is this. If you have surgery on a Friday, you face a greater risk of complications and even death, according to a new study published this week in the journal JAMA Network Open, the Journal of the American Medical Association. A team at Houston Methodist Hospital looked at a number of common procedures, 25 common medical procedures, and they found that the risks went up for those who had surgery on a Friday compared to those who were treated on other days of the week. It is called the weekend effect, and it could reflect that hospitals tend to operate with fewer people on Saturdays and Sundays. So in that recovery period after Friday surgery, they're operating on skeleton crews, and they're not as able to respond to complications in a timely manner. The risk of death for Friday surgeries is as much as 12% greater than if you are having surgery earlier in the week. So let that be a lesson. If you've got a surgery to schedule, don't schedule it on a Friday, apparently. Don't schedule it on a Friday. It's our doom and gloom story of the day. It's very cheerful, isn't it? and one other item here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Right around the corner, the 151st Kentucky Derby is coming up. And the Derby hosts hundreds of thousands of well-dressed visitors every year. It's one of my bucket list things. I want to go to the Kentucky Derby someday. I just think it looks like such a cool event to attend. But the action happening behind the scenes to feed the fans already well underway. The Kentucky Derby won't be for a while yet, but they're already planning the menu. The head chef at Churchill Downs, Robert Lopez, who is in charge of setting the menu and testing the recipes, is infusing this year's lineup with locally sourced ingredients and traditional southern flavors, taking into consideration that the mint julep is the staple cocktail. They're creating recipes that go along with the mint julep. Some of the offerings will include grilled corn and tomato salad, bluegrass fields salad, you know, that bluegrass Kentucky thing, duck fat roasted fingerling potatoes, brown butter farro and roasted root vegetables, Old Forester butter shrimp and orzo, and the signature dish, the slow-cooked beef tips with Kentucky peppercorn sauce. Ooh, doesn't that sound good? Man, we got to get some of those. We got to get some of those recipes for Kyra's Kitchen on Friday. Maybe for your Kentucky Derby party. If you're planning something, you got to go all out. I mean, that's better than Thanksgiving, right there. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly cloudy and windy today with a high in the upper 30s, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 30. A discount retailer is acquiring former Big Lots locations in Ohio.
Ollie's Bargain Outlets has now acquired a total of 63 former Big Lots locations. The chain is based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the acquisitions come as Columbus-based Big Lots navigates bankruptcy. Locations in Bowling Green and Findlay in Northwest Ohio, Chardon in Northeast Ohio, and Middletown in Southwest Ohio are on the list of sites being converted to Ollie's. Big Lots is not completely closing its doors. The company is reported to continue operating 200 stores.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more in this story on our website. The Hancock County Drug Task Force, assisted by the Findlay Police Department Emergency Response Team, executed a narcotics search warrant at an address on Cherry Street in Findlay. The task force said it found liquid cocaine and multiple items indicative of drug trafficking during the search of the residence. The task force said a 34-year-old woman from Findlay was arrested on a warrant for trafficking in drugs, and additional charges of drug trafficking and possession of drugs are expected at the conclusion of the investigation. Get more in the story on our website. The state of Ohio is looking for poll workers.
We are getting closer to the May election here in Ohio, and the Secretary of State is putting out the call for poll workers. He says the state's elections depend on thousands of people in all 88 counties to help people vote. The Secretary of State's office offers several programs that encourage participation to become a poll worker.
WTOL 11's Tim Miller reporting. The city of Findlay says Mayor Christina Mern has been appointed to the Community Leaders of America Steering Committee. The city says the appointment recognizes the mayor's dedication to effective governance, economic development, community engagement, and her position as a respected leader by mayors across the United States. Community Leaders of America is a national organization that brings together Republican mayors and county leaders from across the country. Get more in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, March is DD Awareness Month, and we are highlighting the many ways that Blanchard Valley Center serves the local developmentally disabled community with Carrie Taylor and Nadine Weininger from Blanchard Valley Center. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it. And happy DD Awareness Month to you. It's already been very busy. I understand earlier this week, we were down, a number of folks were down in Columbus to meet with legislators at the State House and all of that. So
yes, our advocacy group, members from Action Club, attended the State House along with other county board representatives throughout the state to talk about policies that impact people with developmental disabilities and what they stand for.
I thought that was interesting. It's more than just photo ops. I mean, obviously a lot of pictures, and it's really cool to get the opportunity to go on the State House floor. But it was a serious meeting as well. There was a serious side of this.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things going on in the world politically, and I think that's just a moment for us to kind of go in there and say, these are policies that are coming down the pike, and this is what we stand for.
Important to put a face on those policies, because it does become very easy to sort of look at the numbers and, you know, the bottom line of what can we afford to do, what we can't do, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. But when you actually put a face on it, it makes it very real.
Hopefully that's the impact being made.
Yeah. Yes. Was the I want to say, was the trip successful? Was it worth it? I mean, did you get out of it what you had hoped?
I would think so. Danielle was the representative there, but I know that they are always heard when we go and visit. I've been there in the past, and the legislators always take the time and hear everything that we have to say.
It also speaks to the fact that this is not an organization, Blanchard Valley Center is not an operation that operates in a vacuum, in a bubble. It takes an entire community to serve those that you serve.
Oh, yeah. There's so many things that we have. We're just like a small gym in Hancock County that people don't know about. So there's so many opportunities, so many things that advocacy, SSA, Project Life, which is for adults that just graduated who are looking at the employment field. And we're there to go out and try new things.
That is another, I know that's an ongoing advocacy that you have for employers in the area to make sure that those who are part of the developmentally disabled community have meaningful, gainful employment.
Oh, that's huge. So on the cover of the Courier today, above the fold, we have a representative, Jackson Dole, and his family. Jackson is currently going through our Project Life program. It's his second year, and he's had work rotations out at Culver's, out at the YMCA, GSW. GSW coming on board as a work rotation was absolutely huge and impactful for us, being a manufacturing site. So we're really excited to see that program grow, and it's just there's the parents, the individuals who are directly impacted, it's very impactful. It's making a difference in their lives. Parents are seeing that I don't have to shelter my adult child with a disability. They can do so much more, and that's what we want to highlight.
It's one of the things that in recent years there has been a concerted effort to make sure that families who are impacted with family members on that spectrum, and as well as the community at large, to understand that these are not individuals who are going to be, for lack of a better term, and I hate to use this, but burdens on society for an entire lifetime.
And that's what this whole month is all about. Yes. It's to highlight the value that people with disabilities bring to the table.
Yeah.
But we got to give them a chance. We have to let, you know, we have to give time to expose what their capabilities are and what their contributions can be.
And that can range from one individual to the next.
Absolutely.
So it's a,
just
it's
like
a very,
you and I.
Right. Yeah. It's a very personalized type of thing. And one of the reasons why you need a well-rounded number of employers who are willing to go out and take that chance.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it exposes. So we've had like restaurant exposure. We've had now manufacturing. We've had the Y involved. Who else? The library. That's another one. So I think it's just finding everyone's niche. But that's just the same as you and I.
And it's so neat to see these people go beyond and these places hiring them. You know, they might not even complete Project Life and they're like, we want them. So that's such a success, you know, just to see that.
Absolutely. So how many, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but how many individuals are we talking about in that program?
In that program.
Just to give people an idea.
Just got the stats this week putting together for the annual report, and I don't want to give out numbers. So the annual report, I'll highlight that. The annual report will be coming out to all voting homes in Hancock County probably here in April. So all of those numbers will be in there. Yeah. So I'll leave an element of surprise.
Are we talking dozens? Are we talking about hundreds?
I think our first class group that went through was four.
I was going to say four or five. Okay.
I think four, but we're growing. Yes. I think it's up to six now. And there's parameters to it. There's a bunch of guidelines that we have to follow with all of that, but it's growing and our rotations are growing, which is important too.
Talk about the ways in which we get those members of the community that you serve into the community and into the workforce and so on. The reverse is also true. You have a number of folks, again, part of DD Awareness Month, coming in to read to the younger kids.
Yes. So our staff pair up with an individual that we support, and we are going out to about 40 different classes throughout the month of March.
Very cool.
Yes. I think that totals about 900 students, which is phenomenal. It's the most we've ever done. We're also doing these pop-up popcorn stands. We're known for popcorn out at the fair. So we kind of want to do a roadshow with our popcorn, and it's a way to just connect with our community. We're not really a a visit site. Our office people don't just stop in to chat. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to go to the people and give an opportunity for them to ask all the questions that they might have of us, but also for us to engage with them and know more about what they're doing.
Another big event that's coming up a little bit later on this month is the Celebrity Basketball Game. It's been going on for years and years and years.
Yes, it is March 25th at 7 o'clock out at the high school, Finley High School. And it's just a time to, it's about inclusion. It's about including individuals with people out in the community. They come, I know that you've played before.
Yep. It's very badly, but yeah.
I'm sure you did a great job. But it's just that, you know, coming together under one roof and enjoying just a game. Having fun.
Yeah.
And it is always a success.
And speaking of athletic pursuits, Special Olympics is, I know, a big part of program. You've got an, again, I don't mean to put you on the spot, how many Special Olympians do we have?
So I think we have about 180 athletes.
Wow.
And we have several different sports that we offer, and some of them are even leveled to the skill level of the athletes.
Yeah.
But we do have a basketball team and some swimmers going to state this weekend.
Very cool. Very cool. And that'll be in Columbus, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay. Very cool. And so we wish them the best of luck. Yes. For folks who want to learn more about Blanchard Valley Center, about the developmentally disabled community, DD Awareness Month in general, where can they get more information?
I would say always visit our website, BlanchardValley.org, or follow our Facebook page, Blanchard Valley Center. There's lots of information there.
And we have a link to it on our webpage as well. Again, Carrie Taylor, Nadine Weininger with us this morning in recognition of Developmental Disabled Awareness Month, DD Awareness Month, in the month of March, and a lot of things going on. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you. It.
Thank you.
Well, who among us has not wondered at one time or another whether we are good parents, whether we're doing it right? As it turns out, there is no set right or wrong way to parent a child. And if you could look up the definition of the phrase out-of-the-box thinking in the dictionary, beside it you would find a picture of Heather Shoemaker. She is the author of the book, It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, a whole collection of unexpected and renegade rules for raising confident and creative kids. From all the way back in March of 2016, it is today's Throwback Thursday.
You have 21 unconventional rules that are going to turn things that we thought we knew about parenting on its head, because all of this stuff runs counter to much of what we have always been told.
Right. I mean, the very first part, I have a chapter called Safety Second, and we've always been told all our lives, safety first.
Right.
Just like, don't talk to strangers. So it's all these ideas that we've just never questioned, and we just accept from generation to generation. But it's really time to examine them, and the research that we're finding and some of the brain research that's coming out is showing that some child development really it flies in the face of all the things we think we're doing right. For example, with homework, you know, a lot of parents have a nightly battle with their kids. It's not just a battle trying to get the kids to do the homework, but it's a battle because deep inside there's some part of the gut of the parent thinking, you know what, she really needs to run around outside, or he really needs to go to bed. But we feel like we need to support the teacher. So all these people who are having those nightly struggles will be quite surprised to realize that the research shows that homework's benefits, the academic benefits, are really only for older students. So it helps the high school students, but at the younger years in elementary school, there's no academic benefit.
You don't necessarily advocate the idea of banning homework altogether throughout childhood, throughout the school years, but specifically in the case of younger children, for whom this book is geared. I mean, and you're gearing this book at what, pre-K, kindergarten, early elementary years?
Yep, exactly. Preschool through elementary. And it hasn't been a problem until recently, because homework wasn't that prevalent. Maybe it started in fifth grade or something. But now it's first grade, kindergarten. A lot of preschoolers have homework.
And along those same lines, you argue that today's kindergarten classes, which I know a lot of schools these days, especially here locally, have just within recent years gone to this all-day, everyday type of kindergarten, very different than what we grew up with. And you say that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, you know, the question is all day isn't the culprit, because you can have an all day program that's really appropriate for a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old. Kids are in daycare a lot. You know, moms and dads work and the kids are in daycare. They can thrive if the program meets their needs. But kindergarten also, besides being a long day, it's expecting so much sitting still and academic work. And kids that age, they're not built to do that. And this is where adult expectations are clashing with what we know about child development. They need to move. They need to interact with other kids. They need to learn emotional skills and conflict skills. They need to play and follow their own ideas. They are going to soak up all kinds of knowledge, but their brains aren't ready for some of what we're asking them to do.
So while some of the rules that you kind of lay out here in the book, while some of them run counter to long-held thinking for generations, others are sort of returning to maybe what we used to do years and years ago. Maybe we had it right all along.
Yes, in some cases it's looking back a generation or so. But what's interesting is that back then, let's say when we might have been growing up and going to kindergarten, we didn't know so much about brain development. The research wasn't there, but we tended as a culture to trust kids more, that what they needed to do, their kind of play ideas, were okay. Now we're much more in a fear culture where we don't trust the kids, but we actually have all this research sitting there, and we know a lot more than we used to. So the gap between what we know about kids and what we do with kids is widening.
Now, the entire book is not necessarily focused on school and academics and so on. One of the rules that I noticed here as I was looking through the book, it's Rule 19, give whiners respect. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, it kind of runs counter to everything that we have been told over the years, that if our kids are whining, we want to ignore that and discourage the behavior. But you take the opposite track here.
Yes, well, I think it's important to separate behavior and feelings. So accept the feelings, and then you can put limits on the behavior. Usually a young child doesn't even know that she's whining. So that squeaky, irritating voice that we hear, she just knows that she's got a big emotion going on and she's desperate to communicate with you. So when we shut them down, that's not helping the problem. So ignore the words and go directly to the feelings that she has and say, I want to understand what you're saying. I can't hear you with that squeaky voice.
And that was kind of a light bulb for me. I mean, my kids are well beyond that age now, but in reading that, kind of a light bulb went on that does make a lot of sense, that these that kids can't stop a behavior that they don't understand. And if they don't understand that they're whining because they don't have that frame of reference that we do, it's just all of a sudden an aha moment for me. So a perfect example, I think, of some of the out-of-the-box thinking in the book. And one of the other sections of the book, and you talk about a number of rules and suggestions on this, and I think it's very timely, deals with sorrow, empathy, and disaster. And again, I think back to certainly when we were younger and in past generations, the thought process was to kind of shield kids from some of the bad things in the world. In today's society, I don't even know if that's possible, even if we wanted to. So how do we deal with things like that?
Right. Well, you know, kids pick up a lot more than we know. They have their radar out all the time. So if things are on in the news, the kids are going to be aware of it, and they may be worried about it. So, you know, if a child is old enough to ask, she's old enough to get an honest answer. So don't worry if it's a 3-year-old asking you something. You know, give an age-appropriate response to that child. And you might be a different answer to your 10-year-old. But don't dodge the whole question. Kids want to understand their world, and they feel safer that way.
The key here being age-appropriate. So obviously we have to be cognizant of that. And by the way, I want to mention this too, because I thought it was interesting. I was reading some information, some of your background, and I did not realize this. A lot of what you have in the book and your philosophy comes from your experience, I'm told, at the School for Young Children in Columbus, a very unorthodox school, you say.
Yes, it is in Columbus. I went there as a child, and it's so unorthodox that the teachers give children boxing gloves and allow them to punch each other in the face. It's a school day. It's great fun because it's a game. It's a kind of puppy play wrestling. They have wrestling matches, and that's the kind of play that they realize kids want to do. And if there's a conflict, they sort that out. But if it's play, you know, you can't wrestle by yourself. You got to have a partner to do it with. So there's great social learning and physical learning and emotional learning and conflict mediation that the kids have to figure out the rules together of these really exciting games.
Sounds fascinating. And like we said, it kind of springboards into a lot of what you have in the book. It is certainly a lot of stuff worth thinking about if you are the parent of a pre-K or elementary age child. It's okay to go up the slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. Heather Shoemaker is the author. And real quickly, have you got a website we can send folks to for more information?
Yes, the website is heathershoemaker.com.
From March of 2016, our Throwback Thursday with Heather Shoemaker, author of the book It's Okay to Go Up the Slide and Other Unexpected and Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. We have a link to the book at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Kind of a light day in the broken news this morning, highlighted by a noteworthy absence of any dumb criminals in the news. I don't know. Yesterday was a little bit light, too. I think we did have one or two dumb criminals, but I don't know if people are just not doing dumb things anymore or, you know, what. I hope not. I hope that people continue to do dumb things from time to time, because otherwise, what are we going to talk about here? I mean, that would. But we do have a handful of eyebrow-raising stories, more than anything, in the broken news this morning. First of all, a flaming hot Cheeto shaped like a Pokemon has sold at auction for $88,000. Yeah, it may not be a dumb criminal, but it's certainly dumb. $88,000 for a flaming hot Cheeto because it's shaped like a Pokemon. The Cheeto, the cheese snack, is shaped like the Pokemon Charizard. Do I have that right? I know nothing about Pokemon. But apparently it's shaped like a Pokemon monster or whatever they are. And the bidding war got pretty heated for this flaming hot Cheeto. It opened. Apparently this was it an online auction? Was going on over the course of the month. Started out at $250. And if that sounds crazy, somebody asking $250 for a Cheeto, it went up to $72,000. Over the course of the month, and then at the very end of the bidding, they get into a bidding war, and the anonymous buyer paid just under $88,000 when including $15,000 in fees to the auction site. I don't know if that was eBay or whatever, but or the Cheetozard, as it's being called. $88,000 in total was the final selling price. I would love to have $88,000 just laying around to blow on a Cheeto shaped like a Pokemon. Not that I would buy that. I would just like to have $88,000 burning a hole in my pocket that I could if I wanted to. You'll note that the buyer was anonymous. Probably because he doesn't want his wife to know he spent $88,000 on a Cheeto. I would want to remain anonymous too. Wow, that is crazy. Let's see what else is going on in the broken news. If you don't have an extra $88,000 laying around, maybe it's because you're in the wrong job. If you're looking for new employment, have a job for you. The Loch Ness Center in Scotland is in search of a full-time Nessie hunter to join its team starting the end of March. That's right. you can get a job looking for the Loch Ness Monster. Responsibilities include operating the Loch Ness Center's deep scan vessel, running trips carrying visitors, and maintaining the vessel. In addition to searching for the legendary monster, applicants are expected to ensure the safety of all passengers on board the Loch Ness monster searching excursions. And the listing here says that other positions are available for those who do not have boating skills. So, you know, to be a Nessie hunter in Scotland, it doesn't say how much the job pays, but I got to figure that it's got to pay pretty well, I would think. Let's see. Speaking of monsters from the sea, you talk about a fish story. Dean Harrison and two companions were out on a boat off the coast of New Zealand recently when a dolphin leapt out of the water and right on top of their boat. Dolphin jumps out of the water and right into their boat. Mr. Harrison said this one decided to jump on board and say hello. 1 minute, everything was fine. And then just like lightning striking, there's this big dolphin in our boat thrashing around and breaking everything. Fortunately, everyone on board was largely unharmed. But the fishermen then had a new problem on their hands. They needed to get the dolphin back into the water. And since their new and exceptionally large crew member weighed in at about 900 pounds, simply pushing it back into the ocean was easier said than done. According to Mr. Harrison, quote, "We looked at the dolphin, still alive and breathing, and we thought we've got to start looking after him and figure out what to do. Because he's stuck in the boat for now, so he's coming along for the ride." Upon contacting New Zealand's conservation agency, Mr. Harrison and his sailing companions were directed to a nearby boat ramp, and their dolphin buddy was safely returned home. Dolphin got to swim away, and we got to walk away unharmed, so we've all got a big fish story to tell. It's a good ending in a situation that could have been very, very different, said Mr. Harrison. That is crazy. Can you imagine? I'm guessing when they got home after their fishing excursion, you know, they tell their wives and their friends, you won't believe what happened. I'm sure nobody believed it. I'm sure nobody believed a dolphin jumped on the boat. You know, they probably looked at all of the mess on the boat created by the dolphin and figured they just had a few too many to drink. You know what I mean? And probably were partying a little too hard on the boat trying to come up with an excuse. But apparently it is documented. And finally, in the broken news this morning, and again, here is an eyebrow-raising story. So you make up this what you will, but according to a new study, swearing is linked to increased pain tolerance. The study out of Keele University in England has found that people who swear when experiencing pain had not only increased pain tolerance, but also a decrease in the level of perceived pain. Do you let out a string of expletives if you, like, hit your thumb with a hammer or something like that? If you do, it increases your tolerance to pain and decreases the amount of perceived pain. The research found that, and by the way, this only applies if you're using real swear words. You know, if you use son of a bucket. No, that doesn't work. You have to use real swear words to decrease the pain perception, not any made-up words. But the effect does seem to carry over into other languages, the researchers say. So if you know how to swear in another language, you can get away with that. This is good information to know as the spring home repair and remodeling season begins. You know what I mean? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever thought about joining the Findlay Rotary Club?
I'm Scott Holman, president of Resolute Wealth Advisor, and I'm proud to be a Findlay Rotarian where collectively we rely on the strengths of each member to impact our club's vision of uniting local leaders to influence positive change.
Our ability to influence positive change locally and around the world grows through membership. To learn more about how you could join the Findlay Rotary Club, go to findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This actually is related to our Throwback Thursday segment from earlier in parenting styles and why it's okay to think out of the box when parenting your kids. It is crazy the way social media has changed the way we do so many things, including the way we parent. Little more than 3 in 5 parents say that their goal for 2025 is to ditch the filters and the unrealistic aesthetics and instead embrace more real, honest parenting moments this year. This is a Talker Research survey of 2,000 parents of kids under the age of 18. They say in order to appear like the perfect parents, 60% admit that they carefully curate their social media accounts. But in 2025, 62% of those are looking to leave those old habits in the past and embrace a candid reality rather than that filtered and tweaked social media feed. In fact, more than half of parents, 53%, feel that it is impossible to measure up to the perfect parents that they see on social media. But today, things are changing. 48% say they are looking to portray themselves and their kids in a not-so-perfect but very real light. Another third would be more likely to do so if they knew others could relate or if they saw other parents posting more candid moments with their kids. 94% of parents experience an average of 7 instances of chaos on a daily basis, according to the survey. 94% experience an average of 7 instances of daily chaos by either what their kid says or does. The toughest arena parents face include disagreements about going to bed. 46% said that is a big battle. 38% say battles over homework or schoolwork. And 36% fight with their kids about getting out of bed in the morning. Arguments centered around food, like what's for dinner and clearing their plate, also very common for 1 in 5, about 18%. And those happen 4 times every week, it says here. The biggest food fight that parents encounter is about trying new foods. 55% say it's a battle to get their kids to try something new. Moms and dads everywhere can relate to that, certainly. Parents estimate that they only win an average of 61% of those battles with their child. But at the end of the chaotic, shenanigan-filled day, 82% of parents believe that there is comedic relief in those imperfect moments. So, something to keep in mind if you've ever wondered whether you are parenting right. Mom and dad, you're doing just fine. Time to find out what's happening in the month of March. The Hancock Historical Museum. Sarah Foltz is here. I almost said Sarah Clevitz. It's not the library. It's the Hancock Historical Museum. Too many Sarahs. I'm getting
a lot of Sarahs. Yeah.
All confused here. You have a brown bag lunch lecture coming up today.
Yeah.
First event of the month of March. Tell us about this. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I am super excited. I love historic homes. Josh from the Rutherford B. Hayes Presidential Library and Museums. He's the historian there. He's hanging out with us today at noon, and he is talking about reading Victorian architecture.
That's the fascinating thing, to be able to just look at a home, and by some of its features, you can actually tell, kind of get an idea of when it was constructed.
There's so much more to the story. And we talk about, oh, it kind of looks like a gingerbread house. And if you haven't, you know, gone more in depth with it,
This is the opportunity to learn how can you really see the transition of these homes. And we're blessed to have many beautiful historic and Victorian homes here in Hancock County. And this is a great tie-in too, because this is the year the museum has the historic homes tour later this year. You'll hear more about that later, but this kind of gives you a little intro into how to really read those structures.
Very good. And that is at noon today, as you said, and that is at the museum. Give us all of the particulars.
Yeah, at the museum at noon. You can bring a lunch if you'd like. These lectures are typically 45 minutes. We leave room for questions so you can be back to work or for the rest of your day. Mm-hmm. It is free for museum members and just $3 for non-members. So we hope you'll come and join us.
Yeah, it is going to be a really interesting topic to talk about if you're into historic homes. Like you said, we have a lot of them here, so that'll be interesting. And you do have a classic movie night that is back. Is this the first one?
Yeah, we're finally kicking off the classic movie nights.
Okay, tell us about this. This is on the 21st, so it's a little ways away yet. But
Friday night, 7 o'clock, also at the museum, completely free to attend for all community members. We provide some refreshments, popcorn. You can also bring your own beverage if you'd like. And we're super excited. I think if you haven't heard or seen Wicked, you definitely should check it out. But we're going back to the OG, The Wizard of Oz. And we're going to be showing the 1939 film March 21st.
One of the things about this, and I mean, you can watch The Wizard of Oz. How many of us have not seen The Wizard of Oz? I mean, everybody's seen it probably multiple times. But this, you kind of do give some historical perspective and some stories behind the film and you know, things like that.
And we're really excited, too. We are actually offering more classic movie nights this year because we have partnered with students at Bowling Green State University and their pop culture department. And so half of the videos that we show this year, that discussion will be led by students. It's a great opportunity and experience for these students to come visit Finley and really get hands-on experience talking about the history of these films.
What's really interesting about The Wizard of Oz is that there were there's a lot going on behind the scenes at The Wizard of Oz.
So much to the behind the scenes, like you said, and this will be fun to
some
dive in.
Groundbreaking special effects, and obviously there were some things that were. It was tough bringing that to the big screen,
right?
And so, yeah, it'll be an interesting evening. And you said that is free.
Yes.
Friday, March 21st. So you want to circle that on the calendar. And then one other event that you've got coming up in the month of March, that is the annual Beatrix Potter Tea.
Yeah, we do a children's tea just about every spring. We wrap up the month of March, Saturday, March 29th, with a proper Victorian tea. This is designed for kids ages 5 to 12, of course, with an accompanying adult, whether that's a parent, guardian, grandparent, if you want to spend a whole, bring the whole family. The seats are limited, though. So tickets are available now at the museum or on our website, which is HancockHistoricalMuseum.org.
Okay. And again, that is March 29th, but get your tickets sooner rather than later, because they typically do fill up.
We do. And we usually have a wait list in case anyone has to drop off. So we will absolutely call anyone on that wait list. But 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a proper tea. We have a wonderful group of ladies who volunteer to make this an educational experience. But you're also going home with favors. You experience crafts and you go home with a book, too.
Okay. So those are on the schedule for the month of March. And you mentioned it is going to be a very busy year.
Yes.
This year.
Yes. Very busy. We fly right into the month of April, and that's not even to mention all the field trips that are gearing up here soon. We'll have last year we reached nearly 10,000 kids from Hancock County, whether that was through field trips, visits to our Little Red Schoolhouse, all of our family focused events. So we are just ready to keep that going.
I know the schoolhouse season getting ready to get underway here very, very soon once the weather breaks. And of course, the museum is open. What are the hours for the museum, by the way?
Yeah, the museum is open Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we're also open on Sundays from 1 to 4. So it's a great afternoon activity.
And as we have mentioned before, always go through during the interim period at the very beginning of the year, sort of give everything a refresh and a fresh look, a new look, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we actually had an interesting interesting January where you'll notice if you haven't been in a little while, the exhibit center is brightened. We have fresh carpet in there. It gave us a chance to really refresh the display cases. And then you will also notice a couple spaces where we have some projects in the works. So throughout the year, we're just going to keep giving you more reasons to visit because we have exciting stuff, a Miller's Luncheonette exhibit that we are hearing so much more excitement around and really to reminisce on those nostalgic experiences.
Absolutely. And when we have you back in April, we'll talk more about the Growing Up 90s Family Night. I'm really excited about
that. Yeah, it's going to be so cool. And that is another completely free community event. And
the millennials are going to want to check that out. So,
yes.
Again, we've got a link on our webpage for more information, everything that's going on at the Hancock Historical Museum for the month of March and beyond. And again, Sarah Foltz with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about every day on the program at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, like almost everything else about the past month and a half, the president's speech to Congress this week generated strong reaction on both sides. A new poll from the BGSU Democracy and Public Policy Research Network examines voter satisfaction with the outcome of the November election and a very early reading on the upcoming governor's race and midterms. We'll dig into the numbers. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.